This is Edward Kelly. I'm the lead for the patient safety program here at WHO, directing the team, and have the great pleasure to be your chair today here at our Weber teleclass and the WHO-hosted teleclass on the first Global Patient Safety Challenge, Clean Care, Safer Care, and particularly on this day, the 6th of May, following yesterday's Sunday, 5th of May, celebrations in much of the world and celebrations in other parts of the world that don't work on Sundays. Today, the 6th of May, celebrating our global Save Lives, Clean Your Hands Day, which WHO continues to support with its collaborating center at the University Hospitals Geneva. And it's an ongoing opportunity for us to emphasize the importance of hand hygiene and the ongoing priority that WHO has put on hand hygiene and infection control in healthcare settings. Many, many years ago, when the patient safety movement was sort of not even born, infection control was really in healthcare settings was really the start of the science around what grew into the patient safety movement. And every year, the 5th or the 6th or sometimes the 7th, depending on when the day falls, we are able to acknowledge the origins of our work and really acknowledge the leadership of some of the people who were there at the beginning and some of the people who continue to lead this fight. And we have two of them on tap for today to present as part of this teleclass. Dr. Professor Didier Pité, who leads the infection control program and the WHO Collaborating Center on Patient Safety at the University of Geneva Hospitals, is also with the Faculty of Medicine, and Margaret Murphy, the lead advisor for the WHO Patients for Patient Safety program. And both of their work has been part of the WHO, the World Health Organization's Patient Safety Program, originally the World Alliance for Patient Safety, and now the Patient Safety Program's work since it was formally created in 2004 and since it informally started its work really in 2001. This year's opportunity is both an opportunity to share with you progress that's been made, but also to really talk about something that we feel very excited about with the World Health Organization, and it's a new area in many ways for the World Health Organization that's used to dealing with big bureaucracies and policy level work and things that usually make people's eyes glaze over in some regards. But this year to talk about really the patient's role in hand hygiene and the patient's role in patient safety more broadly speaking. So perhaps without further ado, I'll turn it over to Didier and then further on to Margaret to take us through today's teleclass. Didier.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed. And it's a great pleasure to be here and be connected with all of you from around the world to celebrate the 5th of May. Let's immediately move to the second slide, which shows to you the picture and a photo of a beautiful 35-year-old woman, the one who is on the left side of these photographs. Her name is Ginny's. The third slide starts with Ginny's stories. As I say, she's a 35-year-old woman. She's married, has one child. He's in a very good condition, loving sports and life, very active. She was actually admitted to the hospital for a fall and right after coming out of work, and the diagnosis was a broken ankle. She needed two surgical interventions that were necessary to guarantee ankle stability. If you move to slide number 4, you can discover that after the second surgical intervention, Ginny's acquired a surgical site infection due to staph aureus. The surgical site infection progressed to an organ space infection called osteomyelitis. Then followed a very long series, a total of 26, of surgical interventions, whether it would be muscle and bone debridement or bone transplantation, during a period of 5 years. And the slide is correct. This is really 5 years of a life story. On slide number 5, you see the following. Unfortunately, the infection persisted with poor clinical improvement and also deterioration of general conditions. Finally, a decision was made of leg amputation and substitution with prosthesis. After 1 year, cerebral vascular problems due to the long-term infection led to right eye blindness and short-term memory deficits. Let's move on slide number 6 and see Jeannie's final considerations. I have been lucky to survive all these medical procedures. The staph infection did not ruin my life, but altered it forever. Hospitals and physicians should provide coordinated care for all their patients throughout their treatment. Had best practices been in place, the staph infection problem would not have occurred and a broken ankle would not have resulted in an amputated leg. Remember, anyone can break an ankle, but that's where the story should end. Let's move to the next slide, which is the typical slide that I use to say, welcome to the hospital, infections are waiting for you at the entrance door of the hospital. And on the next slide, you can read and remember, 1.4 million patients each day in hospitals only worldwide are acquiring a healthcare-associated infection. On the next slide, slide number 9, you can read that through the promotion of best practices in hand hygiene and infection control, Clean Care is Safer Care aims to reduce healthcare-associated infection worldwide. Let's move on the next slide, which is the outline of today's lecture for May the 5th, 2013. I first described to you a patient-centered vision as part of the WHO call to action for the 5th of May. Then I will give you an update of the impact of hand hygiene improvement to reduce healthcare-associated infection. Then we will review hand hygiene promotion, universal spread. And then I will see with you what are the WHO call to action items for the 5th of May, which are monitoring performance and feedback, and of course, as Ed told you earlier, patient participation. Finally, we will review together achievements of Save Lives, Clean Your Hands around the world over the last years. The slide number 11 review the outline first item, a patient-centered vision as part of the WHO call to action for the 5th of May 2013. Next slide, let's remember Jeannie's final consideration. Remember, anyone can break an ankle, but that's where the story should end. Let me tell you that Jeannie could be any one of us. Next slide. The next slide is the beginning of the update of the impact of hand hygiene improvement to reduce healthcare-associated infection. And on slide number 14, you see a summary that is based on a recent complete literature review that we did. Between 1977 and April 2013, a total of 45 studies investigated the impact of hand hygiene to reduce healthcare-associated infection. Over the last year only, as many as 14 original articles plus one review articles have been published on this topic. 41 studies showed that behavioral change illustrated by improvement of hand hygiene and other indicators leads to the reduction of healthcare-associated infection. Only 4 of these 44 studies showed no significant impact on infections, but in 2 studies, hand hygiene compliance did not increase significantly and obviously could not participating in reducing infections. The next slides remind you that all those successful promotion programs results from a multimodal strategies, important to remind it. Very, very key. The next two slides, slide 16 and then slide 17, shows all these papers published last year. And on the slide 18, you see the result of a large study conducted in England and Wales, where you can see that the increased use of alcohol hand rub, as well as increased use of soap on the top part of the slide, was associated with a marked reduction in MRSA, so multi-resistant staph aureus bacteremia. And this paper was published in the British Medical Journal by Sheldon Stone and colleagues last year. On the next slide, you see the experience published by Kirkland and colleague in the BMG Quality and Safety in 2013, where we can see that hand hygiene compliance rate are improving using a multimodal progressive implementation strategy from around 40% compliance in January of 2006 to around 90% compliance in November of 2009. On slide 20, you see the impact of these improvement in hand hygiene compliance in this institution, with a marked and sustained reduction of healthcare-associated infection, as you can see, per 1,000 inpatient days in this institution. And on slide 21, you can see the results of a promotion strategy that induced a sustained and hospital-wide hand hygiene promotion that was very successful and resulted in a significant reduction in healthcare-associated infections, whether it would be, and this is the red marked information in the slide, whether it would be MRSA per 1,000 patient days that significantly reduced, or device-associated infection per 1,000 that also decreased markedly regarding VAP, CLABSI, or catheter-associated urinary tract infection. Thus, a tremendous impact demonstrated over the past several years, increasing hand hygiene compliance is resulting in a significant decrease in healthcare-associated infection. Let's move to the next slide, slide 22, and review hand hygiene promotion universal spread. On slide 23, you review the typical slide that reminds you about the results of the so-called Geneva model of hand hygiene promotion, with a tremendous increase in hand hygiene compliance between December of 1994 and December of 1997. And most of the improvement in hand hygiene compliance was related, as shown in orange, by the increased recourse to alcohol-based hand rubbing. The next slide, slide 24, show that in parallel, hospital-wide nosocomial infection trends, with a large decrease between 1994 and 1998, that reached actually 50% at that time. And those results were published initially in the Lancet in the year 2000. This was the first experience of a multimodal intervention strategy. And on the next slide, you see that this multimodal intervention strategy that was then replicated in many different places around the world was then used to create actually an implementation strategy and toolkit for the WHO guidelines on hand hygiene in healthcare that actually were published in a draft form in 2006 and in a definitive form in 2009. And the next slide reminds you that the guideline and toolkit were actually field tested between 2006 and 2008 in many sites worldwide, as you can see. And on the next slide, on the slide that shows actually that it was in particular tested in the so-called pilot sites that were. And on the next slide, you see some photographs of those slides, Costa Rica, Italy, Bangladesh, Hong Kong, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Mali. Let's move now to the next slides that remind you that, importantly, system change was implemented in all of those sites. System change, which means actually to give the possibility to healthcare workers to use alcohol-based hand rubbing instead of washing hands with soap and water, considering that it is more efficient, more convenient, easier to apply, and also possible to make it available at the point of care, as shown on the slide that you are looking at, slide number 29. Before we look at the result of the so-called pilot site testing of the WHO strategy, let's move to slide 30, where you see a map of the system change that was made possible all over the world based on the global survey that we conducted at WHO in 2012. So this is last year. We looked at the sites all over the world that were able to produce the so-called WHO alcohol-based formulation locally. This is so important because if you want to implement system change, you need to make sure that your hospital can provide to the healthcare workers with alcohol-based hand rub. And as shown on this slide, as many as 39 sites from 28 countries from around the world are producing the so-called WHO alcohol-based formulation. The next slide shows the main result of the survey conducted in 2012. And as you can see, WHO alcohol-based hand rub local production proved feasible in all 39 sites tested. Locally sourced alcohol was used in 72% of sites, and it was sourced from the chemical industry or from the agro industry, whether it would be made, the alcohol would be made out of sugarcane, corn, manioc, and so on. We had excellent product tolerability and acceptability in 82%. Quality control was performed in 87% of sites. Important to say that four countries lacked the access to the required equipment, but all alcohol-based were controlled actually here in Geneva and revealed excellent quality. WHO alcohol-based hand rub promoted as part of a multimodal strategy in 88% of sites, and WHO alcohol-based hand rub formulation proved to be less expensive than marketed product when it was evaluated, this is to say, in 16 sites. So these results are extremely important. These are very recent results based on our survey in 2012, and that those results are telling you that, yes, system change is possible wherever and whenever you are in any hospitals, any district, any healthcare settings around the world. Let's move to the next slide, slide 32, that actually is now coming back on the testing of the WHO strategy in pilot sites. As you can see, there is a picture of hand hygiene compliance depicted by indication, which is to say by the 5 moments, before and after implementation. It is also to note that overall compliance improved in those sites from an average of 51% to an average of 67% after implementation, and that, as you can see on the slide, the improvement was measured for all 5 moments of the WHO My 5 Moments for Hand Hygiene. The next slide, slide 33, shows that when we tested knowledge of hand hygiene before and after training according to the WHO training material by pilot site, knowledge improved in all sites, as you can see, Costa Rica, Italy, Mali, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. The mean knowledge score significantly increased by 6 points, and as you can see, was very significant in all sites. The next slide, slide 34, shows to you that we looked also for indicators of long-term sustainability of the program based on several criteria that are listed. Strategy implementation continued. Alcohol-based hand rub continued to be available. And education sessions were repeated at least once a year in all sites where we got the answer. Then, hand hygiene compliance monitoring and performance feedback was repeated regularly in four of the five sites. Poster use continued and were refreshed in all. Implementation was expanded to other hospitals in the country in five out of six sites. So those pilot sites were really tremendously important to improve hand hygiene within the country. And there was a launch or a sustainment of a national campaign following the pilot testing in these hospitals in four out of six of the sites. So these are very important results, speaking of sustainability of the program, and those results will be soon published in the literature and available in details to all of you. Let's now move to slide 35. Outside of the WHO pilot testing sites, let me show you now the example of a national program in Australia, the national program run by Hand Hygiene Australia since 2009. The components of the program are indicated on the slide. Executive commitment at hospital, state, and national levels. Alcohol-based hand rub at the point of care. Education. Healthcare worker empowerment, clear outcome measures, and last but not least, public and open reporting of good and bad results. These are very important key steps. Measurements in the study included hand hygiene compliance, alcohol-based hand rub usage, and rates of methicillin-resistant staph aureus, whether it would be bacteremia or isolates per 1,000 or 100 patient days. And those rates are recorded monthly and made publicly available. The next slide summarizes for you the fact and remind for you the fact that actually the strategy was multimodal and resulted in a very definitive and important culture change. The next slides will show you some of the very important and main results of this initiative. On slide 37, you see that a total of 656 private or public hospitals are part of the campaign, and between 2009 and 2012, you see the number of hospitals that are increasing participating in the program. Slide 38 shows the national hand hygiene compliance average between 2009 and 2012, and as you can see, no doubt that they are improving markedly over time. Slide 39 shows that this improvement in compliance is visible for and markedly visible for moment one, moment two, and moment five. It's actually true for all moments, but these are the results from Australian public facilities between 2009 and 2012. And the last slide of the Australian facilities is slide 40, where you see that improvement is marked among the medical and the nursing staff over time and very sustainable. With these, I would like to move to the next slide, which is another nice example of hand hygiene promotion universal spread. And it's called the Asia Pacific Hand Hygiene Excellence Award that we are running. We are running this award based on the fact that healthcare facilities registered after they had measured themselves the hand hygiene self-assessment framework, and they could reach actually the leadership level. For those facilities, and this is next slide 42, that are shortlisted, they are visited by infection control leads and experts in hand hygiene promotion, like in this case, this photo was taken in a hospital in Indonesia. The slide 43 shows you the map of candidates and winners of the Asia Pacific Hand Hygiene Excellence Award run in 2012-2013. And the slide 44 shows you the award ceremony that was actually last month in Shanghai during the Asia Pacific Congress, the so-called APSIC Congress. And as you can see, the awardees of the Asia-Pacific Hand Hygiene Excellence Award 2012-2013. I have selected to show you a few pictures on the next slide, 45. These are photos of the Cho Ray Hospital in Vietnam that was one of the winners. And as you can see, the many different activities that were used to promote hand hygiene in this hospital. Then we move to slide 46 with the experience at the West China Hospital of Sichuan University, which is actually one of the largest hospitals in the world, almost 5,000 beds. We are talking about really a very large hospital, and as you can see, system change, education, feedback and reminders, as well as institutional safety climate was actually very active in this institution. And on the next slide, slide 47, you see the result and the impact of the campaign with an increase in compliance in violin, together with an increase in the use of alcohol-based hand rub in green, and as a market impact, a decrease in actually carbapenem-resistant Acinetobacter baumannii, which is frequent in this institution in blue, and MRSA in red. Last example of awardees that I want to show on the next slide is slide 48, the Baptist Hospital in Hong Kong, China, with a very strong mobilization of the infection control nurses with very innovative strategies shown on slide 49, and among them involving a patient participation program that is reminding doctors' hand hygiene and enhancement program during ward rounds, with a very significant improvement depicted on the right-hand side of the slide. The next slide shows you a slide that was also from the Baptist Hospital in Hong Kong that summarized for you innovation, passion, which leads to sustainability. A very, very good, and these are very, very good example of very successful hand hygiene promotion strategy that actually led those hospitals to get awarded by the Asia Pacific Hand Hygiene Excellence Award. For those who work in other countries around the world, we are starting this year with a European Hand Hygiene Excellence Award. We'll start next year with a Latin America Hand Hygiene Excellence Award. Let's move on to today's agenda and go to the next slide. And let's now review the WHO call to action for the 5th of May 2013, which is monitoring and performance feedback as well as patient participation. On slide 52, this 5th of May 2013 call to action is reminded. Number one, continue to focus on hand hygiene monitoring and performance feedback. Number two, patients have a voice too. Identify the best way to gather patient participation in hand hygiene promotion and improvement according to the local culture and your facility's approach. These two focuses were chosen on the basis of the Hand Hygiene Self-Assessment Framework Global Survey findings that you can find at the address, the website address that is indicated to you on the bottom part of slide 52. Slide 53 reminds you that this Hand Hygiene Self-Assessment Framework has been translated from English into French, Spanish, Italian, Arabic, Portuguese, and Vietnamese, as well as in other languages, and you can find those translations on our website. Let me now remind you the results of this survey on slide 54. Where you see the five key elements of the multimodal implementation strategy that were applied in actually the more than 2,000 hospitals that participated in this survey. And here are the responses. And in particular, you noted that regarding the indicator that were hand hygiene compliance monitoring and alcohol-based hand rub monitoring, they were only performed between 59 and 53% of the facilities, as well as patient participation on the right-hand side, very right-hand side column, was only mentioned in 22% of hospitals, but we'll come back on that. On slide 55, Let me remind you that monitoring and feedback of hand hygiene indicators is a vital component of any successful hand hygiene promotion program. For these, you can be helped by WHO website. Slide 56 shows you where to get the information, hand hygiene monitoring and feedback. Slide 57 reminds you where to find the way to move from assessment to actually your capacity to promote hand hygiene to action, because if you are not good in any of those fields, you will find tools in our website to actually improve. And this is by accessing this website address. Slide 58 reminds you that hand hygiene compliance monitoring is very well and easy to assess using our tools. Slide 59 shows the observation of hand hygiene practice, tools that many of you know very well. Let's now remind you what are, and this is slide 60, the advantages of direct observation of hand hygiene compliance. These are accurate evaluation of staff practices at the point of care, including appropriateness of technique and glove use. It allows analysis of compliance stratified by healthcare worker profession or hand hygiene indication. It allows to use standardized methods that thus to benchmark the results. It is essential for performance feedback to show local reality and to understand gaps and progresses. And it is helpful for educational purposes to understand key indications. On the next slide, the disadvantages of direct observation of hand hygiene compliance are summarized. Yes, it's technically difficult sometimes. Yes, it requires resource and time. Yes, you need to check for inter-observer reliability in theory. And yes, it may be associated with a possible out-on effect, but you should use covert observations that are sometimes difficult to conduct. The next slide shows you that this year, to help you, Hand Hygiene Australia is proposing to share a mobile web application that is absolutely very, very convenient to monitor hand hygiene. And on slide 63, you see that accessing this website, you can understand all about the hand hygiene application for international data collection project that we are starting and proposing to use this year. This will facilitate your way to monitor hand hygiene. Another way to do it, and this is next slide, slide 64, is to monitor alcohol-based hand rub consumption. The way it has been done nationwide in Germany. I don't have time to review these results in details with you. You can access the paper published in ISHE in 2012, but this could be an alternative to monitor the surrogate marker of hand hygiene actually at your institution. On slide 65, however, I'm reviewing the caveats regarding the monitoring of alcohol-based hand rub consumption. Remember that it does not address behavior and thus cannot help behavioral change. It can be reliably used as an indicator only when alcohol-based hand rub is the predominant hand hygiene action. The results must be adjusted, for example, for surgical hand preparation technique at your institution. If you are using alcohol for surgical hand preparation, it is clear that a large proportion of your use will be due to surgical hand preparation and not related to actually hand hygiene at the point of patient care outside of the operating room. And finally, it is influenced by unnecessary hand hygiene actions by healthcare workers, used for other purposes, and used by patients and visitors. On the next slide, I show you very new data for 5th of May 2013. Actually, we conducted a systematic review of automated electronic systems for hand hygiene monitoring. The objective was to review the available published studies related to the use of automatic or electronic systems for hand hygiene monitoring. The specific objectives were to evaluate type of technology and methods used, assess the correlation of these methods' results compared to standard hand hygiene direct observation data, to analyze advantages and disadvantages of these methods, to assess feasibility and cost issues, to evaluate association with improvement of order process and outcome indicators. The next slide, slide 67, showed you the beginning of the preliminary results. We looked for Cochrane Library, but there was no review available, PubMed, Embase, and so on. And you can find all this information at the website address indicated at the bottom part of the slide. Slide 68 shows the flow diagram for selection of articles. We got 341 abstracts identified and finally retained 19 articles included in the analysis. On slide 69, you see the conclusion of our study. What are the advantages of the system, that automated electronic systems for hand hygiene monitoring? One, it allows continuous monitoring. Two, it can mitigate the outer effect. Three, it requires no expertise, human resources for observation. Four, it is automatic data downloading and analysis. Five, it is useful to evaluate dispenser use according to location in the institution. And six, it could be effective as an intervention to improve compliance. Let's move to slide 70 that review the drawbacks and gaps of these systems. No distinction between indication and opportunity. Most systems refer to entering and or leaving from the room and not to standard indications for hand hygiene. There is a risk for jeopardizing the five-moment approach. Only methods with personal badge are able to identify the healthcare workers and their number per each opportunity. Hand hygiene technique and glove use is not assessed. Cost evaluation is not available and only from one study. And it looks like they will be unaffordable for settings with limited resource. Slide 71 shows our main conclusion. Most studies were pilot, small sample size. There is a need for larger, more accurate studies. Most published studies are based on systems that either do not measure compliance, do not use standard definitions of opportunities for measuring compliance. There is limited evidence for validation of their use compared to direct observation, and some evidence for electronic monitoring to be effective as an intervention to improve compliance. Next slide. In conclusion, these new technologies are promising and may become the future approach to hand hygiene monitoring when available, resources permit. And provided that they reflect the five moments for hand hygiene, they could be extremely interesting and part of the future. However, additional research is needed to support their adoption as a standard, and you can access the website if you want more detailed. Next slide, slide 73, is actually addressing the second very important item of the WHO 2013 call for action, which is patient participation in hand hygiene promotion. Slide 74 reviews the scientific evidence that has been published in these two papers that are indicated, and slide 75 in two additional papers more recently published. Slide 76 remind you that when we did this hand hygiene self-assessment framework survey, the response to key indicator indicated that only 22% of the more than 2,000 healthcare facilities are currently or were currently using patient participation as one element of the promotion strategy, despite of the fact that we strongly recommended it to be introduced in the culture change that we wanted to do. Now, let's show you, let's move to slide number 77 that shows actually the WHO survey on patient participation that we have conducted in facilities around the world, very, very recent data. The aim was to describe the current practices and perceptions regarding patient participation amongst infection control professionals at institutions using such a strategy. It was a self-administered survey between December 2012 and March 2013. So those results are hot from the press. Participants were institutions with patient participation program within actually our database from the WHO Hand Hygiene Self-Assessment Framework Global Survey. We obtained a fantastic response rate, 260 out of 658, from 41 countries from all six WHO regions. The next slide, slide 78, shows actually a very important information. Countries with at least one respondent are from around the world, and as you can see, there are participating institutions from all over the world where patient participation is becoming a reality. The next slide shows actually patient participation strategies used in those centers, whether patients are trained for covert hand hygiene observation, patient representative in infection control patient safety committees, patients invited to remind healthcare workers about hand hygiene, patients educated when healthcare workers perform hand hygiene, patients educated about healthcare-associated infection, visitors educated when to perform hand hygiene, and patients actually educated when to perform hand hygiene. The next slide is actually reviewing for you barriers to patient participation that I won't have time to detail with you, but you can get the slides, as you know, and you can have a look. And on the slide 81, you see the impact of patient participation. Three major marked: patients take more active role in their own care, improved hand hygiene compliance is actually noted amongst healthcare workers, and there is a very strong institutional safety culture that is actually following in patient participation into hand hygiene promotion. Slide 82 shows our conclusion. Institutional patient participation programs for hand hygiene promotion frequently include patient education, but other strategies to empower patients to actively participate and take a more active role in their care are less common. Patient participation programs are perceived as useful for improving hand hygiene and creating a positive patient safety climate. The next slide shows you what is available from WHO, and you can access the website and find a lot of tools. The next slide also show you that we have an inventory of patient stories. And actually, slide 85 shows you that we have developed tips for implementing a successful patient participation programs, tips for patients, and tips for institutions. On slide 86, you have tips for implementing a successful patient participation program at your institution. Ensure that the multimodal hand hygiene improvement strategy is in place. Obtain strong support from your institution leadership and key stakeholders. Reassure healthcare workers about the goal of patient participation. Convince patients that they can be involved in hand hygiene promotion. Identify champions to support the patient participation program in your institution, pilot test the program, and measure the success of your program. And those are available in our website. On the next slide, you see tips for patients. Four main things you and your family can do. One, ask of an initiative involving patients or a patient participation program exists. Two, don't be afraid to ask about hand hygiene practices in the facility. Three, observe if alcohol-based hand drop dispensers as well as sinks, soap, and towels are available in room or if healthcare workers carry pocket bottles. Four, if hand hygiene products are available, start by thanking your doctor, nurse, or other healthcare workers when you see them cleansing their hands before touching you. Next slide shows you the highlights to help you understand the right moment and the right way to remind doctors, nurses, and other healthcare workers about hand hygiene. We have developed a tool that is available on the website. In summary, it answers to the question who, what, when, where, and how. These were news for the 5th of May 2013. Let's move to slide 89 and to the last point of this agenda for today's lecture, achievements of Save Lives, Clean Your Hands around the world over the last year. The next slide, slide 90, reminds you that political commitment is essential to achieve improvement in infection control and show you the signatures of Ministry of Health. And the next slide actually reminds you that a total of 131 countries are committed to address healthcare-associated infection as of the 5th of May 2013, covering for 93.5% of the world population, with Algeria being the last country who signed this yesterday. Yesterday in Algeria, the Ministry of Health signed. We'll come back on that. The next slide shows countries and campaigns that around the world are national campaigns. These are 50 national campaigns with three new campaigns in 2013, Algeria, Benin, and New Zealand. And the next slide shows you the Ministry of Health of actually Algeria signing the pledge and handing this pledge to Dr. Benedetta Allegrensi, the deputy lead of the WHO Clean Care is Safer Care program, no later than yesterday in Algeria. So this is really hot as information. The next slide, slide 94, reminds you that we move from country pledge to patient point of care. And the next slide reminds you that we need to celebrate. Celebrate the 5th year anniversary of the WHO Save Lives, Clean Your Hands, the importance of hand hygiene in healthcare, bringing together on the 5th of May all people from around the world. Slide 96 reminds you about the large number of facilities worldwide from 168 countries, representing more than 9 million healthcare staff and almost 4 million bed care. And the next slide reminds you that this year we had new countries on board that are listed on the bottom part of the slide and 735 additional facilities. The next slide say, let's celebrate our success. You see access to the WHO 5th of May 2013 website pages that increased from the beginning in October of last year to this last April monitoring. Very, very exciting to see how many people around the world are joining the campaign. The next slide shows and summarizes for you national events organized on the 5th of May from all around the world. And the next slide, the 5th of May main stakeholders, and as you can see, there are many, many, many. Last but not least, on the next slide, you see the support from private organizations for patient safety, the so-called PAPS, sharing costs and leveraging all possibilities. This year, the PAPS members were very active, printing cards and visit cards, promoting the 5th of May, promoting the five moments, using banners, posters, training programs, and so on. The next slide tells you PAPS telling the world about the 5th of May. We are helped. We are going to be more and more to promote this 5th of May to improve patient safety. The next slide shows you many different photos of ambulatory care practice. And if you remember correctly, next slide, issued the 5th of May 2012 these actually guidelines for hand hygiene in ambulatory and special care practices. And as shown on the 5th of May 2013, those guidelines have been translated in Spanish and are now available in these languages too. The next slide shows you new Arabic web page, new for the 5th of May on the WHO website. And with the next slide, you see those tools translated actually in Arabic. The next slide shows you the new Chinese web page, and the next slide shows these new tools translated into Chinese, proving you that we are moving and moving and moving around. And the news for the 5th of May 2013 are many, as you can see. I would like you to move to the next slide, the slide 110, thanking you for your support. You contribute to patient safety and saving lives tremendously. You can try to ask questions, but actually question asking is not possible through these teleclasses, but you can follow us on Facebook of the World Health Organization and on Twitter and ask questions. We'll try to answer to your question and in particular access our websites and asking also sending inquiries to Paul Weber Training Program that I would like to thank very, very, very much for making these things possible. On my next and last slide, let me show you this brochure of Patients for Patient Safety, which is for me a fantastic occasion to introduce my dear friend Margaret Murphy, who is the lead of the Patients for Patient Safety, and we will now be addressing to you in the next coming few minutes. Thank you very much. Thank you, Margaret, for taking over.
And thank you very much, Didier. We certainly have a lot of additional information now and a lot of very motivational information, which I'm sure the people who have joined this teleclass will make good use of. Well, the dilemma, as I see it, if you would please move to the next slide, which is titled Introduction, slide 112. The dilemma in healthcare certainly often centres on translating aspiration into reality, recommendation into implementation, and ensuring that policies and protocols do actually result in safer and better quality care for the raison d'etre of care, the patient, the man in the bed. And you certainly illustrated that in the material you put before us. I'm convinced of the maxim which says facts are friendly, and that too is particularly relevant to healthcare. And it is even more applicable in the light of the evidence we have now been exposed to. Yes, it is a real and welcome fact that many interventions and initiatives to promote hand hygiene have been put in place worldwide. It is also a very real fact and a great pity that the opportunity to identify areas for improvement, as well as identifying good and innovative practices which need to be replicated, can often be lost. And this loss often occurs when the reality of how care is delivered and experienced by patients is not gleaned directly from the patient and then used for learning at individual, organizational and system levels. It was quite chastening to learn that only 22% of the surveyed facilities use patient participation. Such participation is necessary in order to identify the gaps between the patient safety measures that are possible and the level of safety actually being experienced by patients, and that, of course, has to be addressed. Next slide, 113. Patients for Patient Safety has been collaborating with the WHO Save Lives, Clean Your Hands campaign in order to encourage patient participation in hand hygiene promotion. Activities for mobilization include newsletter articles, targeting emails to gather rapid responses from the patient community. New web pages have been created, presentations and online discussions have been provided. There have been some educational workshops and, of course, the sharing of feedback and resources. Next slide, 114. Individual patients for patient safety champions have risen to the challenge and bring a proactive voice coupled with tangible action in order to advance patient safety in this area. And I'll share just a few examples, truly the tip of the iceberg, because many of us include in our presentations the patient perspective on HAIs and hand hygiene in particular. Canadian champion Barbara Farlow is a member of the Canadian Patient Safety Institute, and she's on their planning committee for their 5th of May activity. And that centres on a contest to motivate and challenge hospitals to develop patient engagement strategies for hand hygiene. People have been very creative around this. Barbara is also on the committee of a two-year project aiming to increase hand hygiene compliance across Canada. In Mexico, Patients for Patient Safety champions, led by Evangelina Vasquez, have been running workshops to engage patients in work to prevent nosocomial infection. They've been using the Save Lives, Clean Your Hands film to inspire and inform patients. And that also encourages them to share their experiences and discuss their ideas on how to be engaged in preventing infection and especially in improving hand hygiene. Champions around the world reviewed and provided valuable input to the finalization of a draft WHO document relating to tips for patients in promoting hand hygiene, and Didier spoke about that. Next slide, 115. Janine Thomas, a patient for Patient Safety Champion and founder of the MRSA Survivors Network in the United States, conducted a webinar in March on hand hygiene and MRSA prevention. On the 30th of May, she will present and be a panel member during an event at the Institute for Antimicrobial Resistance at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. Nagwa Metwali from Egypt has been active in her hospital, partnering with SNAPS in the areas of hand hygiene and infection control. A highly respected champion, she has been encouraging hospital directors and others to take action and raise awareness. At the request of the WHO EMRO office, she helped facilitate arrangements for a film crew to record hand hygiene interviews with staff and patients in a variety of wards at both the private and public hospital. Patients are involved in the 5th of May hand hygiene campaign celebrations. You might even look on me being part of today's teleclass as part of all of that. And you can see there is a variety, but as I said, it's merely the tip of the iceberg. Next slide, 116. Raising awareness is a significant part of the work of Patients for Patient Safety. The quarterly newsletter has a readership of many hundreds around the world and features patient safety articles, including those on hand hygiene. Our membership also contributes to creating an inventory of patient stories. IAPO is one of 13 collaborating organizations within the Patient for Patient Safety Network and has responded positively to our request for support in our efforts to raise patient awareness. And they did that by creating a web page on their site relating to patient participation in hand hygiene. Slide number 117. As I said, merely the tip of the iceberg, but what we are doing is promoting awareness, stimulating change. However, the most effective tool we patients have to bring about that change, to motivate healthcare staff to be compliant, is to relate our experiences, tell our stories. Why? Because our stories evoke feelings. And I would like to think that no healthcare worker, being truly conscious of the devastating consequences for the patient, would deliberately put that patient in jeopardy by neglecting to observe the hand hygiene protocol. Therein lies the power of the story, the graphic description of those consequences. In 1967, Vera Keane wrote in the Bulletin of Nurse Midwifery, "Facts do not change feelings, and feelings are what influence behavior. The accuracy, the clarity with which we absorb information has little effect on us. It's how we feel about that information that determines whether we will use it or not." Some time ago, I spoke at a conference in London, and following that presentation, a Welsh doctor said he was taking a lot home, pointing first to his head and then to his heart. Vera Keane knew what she was talking about. And the patient's story certainly is about the heart of the matter. Next slide, 118, a reality check. It is significant that quite recently the internationally renowned surgeon Atul Gawande asserted that more than anything, what distinguishes them from the mediocre is not that they fail less, it's that they rescue more. Hand hygiene is a perfect opportunity to practice effective rescue. And so, for the story, I would like to introduce you to my good friend Dennis. Looking forward to being fit and well for the upcoming wedding of his daughter, he underwent elective triple bypass surgery. His family was concerned since, despite being assured the procedure went well, he He was considerably agitated, and 3 days passed before he woke fully from the anaesthetic. A further concern was bruising on his neck and accompanying pain, which they were told was not unusual. Some 9 days later, grey and shivering, he felt the life go first from his legs and then from his arms. The privately owned MRI scanner not being available at the weekend, he was taken to theatre for what you could describe as blind surgery, to relieve what was at the time considered to be a clot. Acknowledging this to be a misdiagnosis, 2 days later he returned to theatre because of the infection, which was identified to be at the top of his spine. A poor prognosis of reversing the paralysis was delivered because of the damage to his spinal cord as a result of hospital-acquired infection, which was identified to the family as MRSA only when they put the question. Traumatized by this turn of events, his family were further alarmed by the absence of efforts to prevent spread of infection. They saw little evidence of hand washing, wearing of gowns, or protective clothing. The same cleaner progressed up one side of the main ward, through Dennis's isolation area, and back out to finish cleaning the remainder of the ICU ward outside, all with the same cleaning materials and equipment. A reality. During the remaining 3 weeks of his life, Dennis underwent 3 further operations. Not responding to antibiotics, 6 weeks after walking into the hospital, full of hope and expectation, he died a quadriplegic, fully aware of every step in his deteriorating condition. A generous, gregarious family man with a strong sense of right and wrong. Also a man of faith, his only comment to his heartbroken wife was, "This hospital has a lot to answer for." Dennis sorely needed someone to rescue him, and that is why everyone, patient, family, healthcare professionals, support staff, household staff, all of these without exception, need to operate out of that rescue mode. Slide 119. Yes, it has become a very real fear for patients that the medical issues which cause them to be admitted to care are more often than not successfully addressed, but that during the interaction, a significant number of patients like Dennis suffer harm, even death, because of contracting a HAI. When we look at the efforts to prevent, minimize, mitigate the effects, we find that much of the guidance is directed at healthcare professionals, and that with the exception of hand washing, using a gel, and asking your healthcare professional to wash his hands, there is little robust and all-encompassing around a patient engagement strategy. It's also a fact that there is a considerable degree of variance in the implementation of the guidance for healthcare staff. Patients could play a significant role in providing feedback of their experience of the application of hygiene protocols during their patient journey. Such data could be collected during the audit process. We conduct clinical audits, process audits, outcome audits. The missing piece is the patient experience audit. We have to remember that the former audits are often little more than a snapshot in time, while the patient experience audit would give a true reflection of practice as it happens every time. It is important that leadership recognizes and empowers those with a passion for healthcare improvement, that it ensures that meaningful partnerships are created with patients, especially those who have experienced HAI or error. We cannot change the past, but we can use that past to inform the present, and in the present, we can influence the future. And isn't it so much better if we do that together, in partnership? It is a fact that the patient and the family comprise the entity that is present throughout the full continuum of care. And most importantly, the patient is without doubt the individual with the greatest vested interest in the outcome. A first step in that process is a commitment which says, we will proactively engage patients in their own care. We will capture in every way possible the lessons to be learned from the raison d'etre the patient, and over and above that, we will embed patient and family into every aspect of our care and of our organization's activity. And the last slide, 119, the corresponding patient pledge is articulated in the Patient for Patient Safety London Declaration. Slide 120. We patients for patient safety will be the voice for all people, but especially those who are now unheard. And again, in honor of those who've died, those who've been left disabled, our loved ones today, we will strive for excellence so that all people receiving healthcare are as safe as possible, as soon as possible. This is our pledge of partnership, our patient pledge of partnership, and it is certainly my continuing pledge of partnership. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Margaret. This is Ed again, and thank you for those incredibly powerful stories, which remind us of the lessons that we put forth here in these teleclasses and in the guidelines and in the materials and in the studies that Didier talked about, that each and every one of those numbers that are explored and studied in great detail by scientists around the world and here at WHO is each and every one a father, a mother, a sister, a brother, a son, or a daughter. And I think that's what keeps all of us, both at WHO and globally here on in this community listening, motivated and moving forward. Just to conclude today, I would once again like to thank Didier and Margaret for their input on this, the special 6th of May, the day after the 5th of May teleclass. We've heard about some incredible accomplishments that Didier talked about in terms of the campaign and the work that the WHO and the WHO Collaborating Center have led in order to try to improve healthcare-associated infection rates around the world through improved hand hygiene and the ability to reach 131 countries and to see. I know that took a little bit of work to get that photo in this set of slides. I'm very pleased to see our WHO staff lead, Dr. Benedetta Allegranzi, accepting that pledge from the Algerian minister. And for those of you who followed what's gone on in North Africa over the past years, you know that this was no small accomplishment for the ministry to pledge to move forward. And I think the work that Didier and the team have done to better understand where are the barriers in terms of improved hand hygiene and also specifically in terms of engaging patients has allowed us to in a more educated fashion to engage in this year's theme around patient engagement in hand hygiene. And it was very much our pleasure to be a pioneer in this regard. WHO puts out lots of messages for ministries and puts out lots of public health messages for patients, but it does not always engage with patients and families around their own care. And this is one of the first campaigns to really take an active role in that. And the work on the TIPS document that Margaret mentioned is something that we would encourage all of you to visit the website and to download and to spread, as well as to examine some of the results in more detail that Didier talked about today that we weren't able to go into. It's very clear from our own work that patient engagement, it's as someone who's spent his career working in quality and safety, it's not an easy task. There's a lot of barriers that were detailed earlier. There's a lot of perceptions around lack of time, around patient reluctance, around the lack of support for such programs. All of those were put forward. But as you can see, most of those barriers that were mentioned, they're all perception-related barriers or attitudinal barriers. Sometimes those are the toughest ones to surmount, actually. Usually the issues around resources and others can be solved in some ways, but changing attitudes and changing behaviors, it's the toughest nut that we've had to crack in healthcare improvement globally, and I think that's what we're facing here. But you can also see the results that of the people in our work that we surveyed, 70 to 80% noted that stronger patient engagement actually improved hand hygiene in their institutions. And they all noted even stronger percentage, noted that their institution had a stronger patient safety culture across the institution with a strong patient engagement program. So while we believe here at WHO Patient Safety Program that the engagement of families and patients is an end in and of itself, there is also benefit to the institution and to outcomes for patients from that as well. And that's a story that is not told enough. And I think that all of us here and all of you listening will we hope, be out there and be telling that story, whether happens to be through social media following this teleclass or through word of mouth or your own email. So please point people to the website and to the tweets that have been going on, and try to follow DDA on Twitter, and as well as the WHO Twitter channel. And I'll just note on slide 121 as we wrap up here that we do have we take forward the momentum from this 6th of May special lecture by DDA and Margaret into a series of lectures following the rest of the year. We'll look at risk assessment and priority setting in low to middle income countries coming in July. Then in August, a special look at decontamination, which has been something that this community has asked for and has asked for more examination on. Then a theme that we've spent quite a bit of time on with colleagues from Johns Hopkins and our colleague Peter Pronovost, preventing central line associated bloodstream infections in September. Then a special look at the patient safety partnership approach that we've piloted at WHO in October, and our colleague Julie Stroh will look at that, as well as an examination of a very pressing issue that was over 1 year ago, the World Health Day focused on Day focused on the antimicrobial resistance issue, with the release of a special publication that DDA and David Heyman and others helped to progress. Finally, we'll end the year with a look by Andreas Voss at the issue of multidrug-resistant organisms. So I'd just like to thank the sponsors for the program and thank Weber Training for their organization of this. And we'll be very pleased to take your questions by email and to follow up with you, as we said, through social media and through Twitter. And very much encourage you to take forward the messages that you heard here today in your own celebrations on the 6th of May, if you're celebrating today, and following through the year. Thanks very much for joining us here on this teleclass.